This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today's episode of Entree Architect Podcast is a special conversation about something new we're building called The Iconic Firm. This is not an Entree Architect program. This is a completely new initiative shaped by more than a decade of working closely with small firm architects, seeing where growth tends to stall and what actually helps firms break through. I'm joined by Jeff Eccles, architect, growth and innovation catalyst, and my co-founder at The Iconic Firm. Jeff and I share a belief that firms don't struggle because of a lack of talent, but because they lack clarity around who they are, what they stand for, and how they communicate their value. In this episode, we're exploring why becoming an iconic firm matters now more than ever, what that means in practice, and how architects can join us for the Iconic Firm Accelerator this April in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jeff Eccles, welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast.
It's great to be back, Mark. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. You know, you and I talk every week, and we talk regularly throughout the week by text and other methods. It's great to have you back on the podcast and share some of these conversations that we have on a regular basis today on the podcast.
Yeah, we were talking right before we started. As with all of your podcasts, right, there's a guide or there's an outline and there's questions and whatnot to help prepare for it. And I was reviewing those as you were, as we were preparing for this. And, you know, the thing that went through my head is, this is, you know, on one sense, why, right? Why? Because this is what we talk about, or one of the things that we talk about all the time. And as you said, this is, you know, this comes out of more than 10 years. If we were to act like firms, we would combine it, right? This comes from 20 years or 30 years or 40 years of, you know, combined experience. But yeah, this is what we're going to talk about today. Is a culmination of lots and lots of conversations, lots and lots of work, of course, lots and lots of experience. And so it feels like home, one. It's not the first time that I've been here, obviously. but it feels like home in the sense that we're coming back to this conversation that actually is we're recording this. The last time we talked live about this was just 2 days ago. So here we are.
So you've been down the podcast a couple times, three times, four times. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
You've shared your origin story before, but for some context for this conversation, why don't you go back and share when you discovered your passion for architecture and the things that you do, and maybe even who or what inspired you to get started?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for asking. My origin story starts in Georgia. I'm originally from Atlanta. My dad was transferred to Chicago when I was a kid, so I don't sound like I'm from Atlanta. But both of my parents grew up on farms. One definitely sustenance farmers, one slightly more commercial. But that meant that I grew up around a lot of really old homes, a lot of old barns, a lot of agrarian structures, essentially barns and milking houses and old farmhouses, you know, out in the country. And that's when those structures and that type of architecture, which is not usually what we think about when we're in school, but that's where the interest started. And then when I was a kid, my dad was transferred to Chicago. So we moved far away from the rural country of the Deep South. But my mom, being a lifelong learner, even to today, as kids, she would take us to the museum. So I've, you know, I've been to all the museums in Chicago multiple times and all those things. But she discovered this guy called Frank Lloyd Wright. And I don't know why, right? I don't know why she latched onto, oh, here's Frank Lloyd Wright, because at this point I'm like 8 or 9 years old, right? She latches on to this or finds out about Frank Lloyd Wright and we start exploring. And so I've done the Wright tours, I've done, you know, the walking tours and the home and studio and pretty much anything that over the years of my childhood that became open to the public, I've been through those Frank Lloyd Wright projects. After I graduated from school, I lived just a few blocks from Unity Temple. So I walked past Unity Temple twice a day on the way to work and on the way home. But, you know, I have to give that a lot of credit, just being exposed to Wright and the fact that, you know, this is architecture, right? This is architecture with a big A as we think about it in school and in the profession. I mean, here's this guy that designed homes mainly, specifically for couples, for families. You know, there's a client involved and there's a design that's custom to them, right? And their lot and their lifestyle and all of those things. And so that's definitely where it started. And, you know, when I get into high school, I'm part of a program in school where I've got some independent study and I became fascinated with dome stadiums at that time, King Dome, the Superdome, stadiums like that. So I did a whole project on designing stadiums and then ended up in architecture school at Ball State and graduated from there with a couple of degrees and went back home, what was home back then, went back home to Chicago and worked up there for a few years before taking a job down here in Indianapolis where I live now. But one of the things that happened in Chicago after graduation, you and I are the same age, we graduated into a really rough economy, which happens, has happened about every 10 years or so. But we graduated into a bad economy. It was hard to find a job. And when I did finally land a job, it wasn't long. I mean, I want to say a month or two before that firm started laying people off. It was a slog. It took me 9 months to find a job. I land this job. And then pretty soon after starting, they start laying people off. And so I learned to not like to go to work on Fridays because every time I got on the train on a Friday morning, my first thought was, well, is this the last ride? Because Fridays were the day that they laid people off. And so what I decided to do at the firm, you know, in my work was try to make myself as valuable as I could, right? Try to make myself indispensable. It's, you know, that sounds a little bit heady for a 20-something year old to be thinking that or saying that. But there was one other person that was my contemporary. They graduated at the same time I did, had the same degree I had. And I mean, this might sound a little bit ruthless, but I decided that if it came down to a Friday morning and it was going to be them or me, I wanted it to be them, right? And so what can I do to set myself apart, skill sets and otherwise? And eventually what started to happen was that someone would come up to my desk and tap me on the shoulder and they'd say, hey, you're really good with those graphics. Why don't you go help the marketing department with this thing that they're working on? Or you're really good with writing. Why don't you go help the business development team that's got this deadline on Friday or something like that? And one, that saved me, you know, in the sense of that job. But two, that also opened this door to this thing that we didn't learn about in school, which was the business of architecture. Like, oh, yeah, there's this marketing team and they're the ones that are out there pushing the work that we do. They're the ones that are getting us published, getting us our applications for different awards, all of those types of things. This is for those of you that haven't figured out the timeline yet. This is the early 90s, right? This is before social media. This is really early in terms of websites and things like that. But they're pushing our work out, our messaging out. And then there's this business development team, right? And they're going out there and they're talking to people and they're finding people to collaborate with and they're responding to RFPs and with the marketing team. And there's this whole machine, there's this whole engine that is running that is allowing us to do the thing that we thought we were going to do when we were in school, right? Oh, I'm going to go design museums or fire stations or schools or whatever, homes like Frank Lloyd Wright did. But there's this whole team that's cranked this engine, that keeps this engine running, that's allowing us to do that work. And that's the business of architecture. And that really set me down this path where, you know, I worked on some great projects. Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago is one. That stair in the museum, that's the most photographed aspect or element of the project. I call that my stair. I didn't actually design it, but someone handed me a napkin, literally a napkin sketch one day and said, figure this out. And I figured out the stair and now there it is. And it's a beautiful feature in that building. And, you know, I worked on the design side for a long time and the project management side for a long time. And my career kept trending towards the business of architecture. And so, you know, fast forward a few years, I'm part of management teams. I'm helping to run firms. I'm at some point in charge of our digital transformation. I get recruited to work in an architectural startup that gets me into design, build, develop, and then another one, and then eventually a couple of stints in venture capital and running startup incubators. And really now, having most recently worked on the venture capital side and with the incubators and also mastermind groups for leaders of innovation across the AEC industry, really focused on how do we grow? How do we grow firms, whether they're one person or they're $1 million revenue firm or $100 million revenue firm? And what does growth actually mean? Right? Because in any of those scenarios, any of those contexts, it can mean something different.
Absolutely. And you and I have been friends for a long time, but we've also collaborated for almost a decade at Entree Architect. Many of the listeners, I'm sure, know you well. You are the developer and the host of the Build Your Brand podcasts. We've developed Build Your Brand courses, Context and Clarity, Brand, and all of that that came along with Context and Clarity and the Context and Clarity podcast. More recently, In the Network every morning, Java with Jeff, our morning mindset for members inside the Entree Architect Network. You're there every day, 5 days a week, sharing your knowledge and inspiration to members at the network. And through those 10 years, you and I have worked with the community of small firms at Entree Architect and have noticed something different about firms that hit $1 million or more, right? They become a different type of firm. And so that's the inspiration of the iconic firm, that once you reach $1 million, things get different. And that community of architects needs some support too. And the things that we're doing at Entree Architect are not supporting those firms at $1 million or more the way they need to grow,
right?
They need to be inspired, they need to be able to make the impact that they want to make in the world, right? If you reach $1 million or more in revenue, you've done a lot of good things to get there, mm-hmm. but you also have an intent of growth, right? And typically in our community, that growth is inspired by a need or a desire to have an impact in the world in a really big way.
Yeah.
And so the iconic firm came from that. So when you think of those firm owners who've built these firms up to $1 million, what are they feeling once they've achieved that early success and hit that wall and they feel stuck and they don't know what to do? Talk about that a little bit, about that moment where they work their way through Entree Architect. They get to a certain point in their careers and in their firms, and you're just like, they keep hitting this wall.
Yeah, that's a good question because there are a lot of commonalities there. And you mentioned Java with Jeff, right? That was not the intended name for that show, but someone renamed it that very quickly. And one of the things that I appreciate about the fact that we launched that back on December 12th of 2022, is that right? Is that, you know, when we first started talking about that and talking about growth mindset versus fixed mindset, et cetera, I thought, yeah, I can host this. And I realized very quickly, and you know, I do this, right? I'll jump in feet first and or jump out of the plane and figure the parachute out on the way down or whatever the cliches are. I realized very quickly, hosting Java with Jeff every day, that there's a lot more out there about growth to be learned. There are practices to be developed, et cetera. So I started hosting the show. We started talking about growth mindset and started to see these commonalities. Right? These people show up for this amazingly. Right? Some of them show up at 5:30 in the morning, their time, to talk about the mindsets that are necessary for growth. And like you said, this is an Entree Architect. It's in the Entree Architect Network. So many of these people are sole practitioners, sole proprietors, or at least small firm architects. Many, if not most, have not hit that $1 million threshold yet in terms of their revenue. But they're showing up to learn about growth. They're showing up to grow. They're showing up to put this work in. Now, I mentioned the mastermind groups that I started and ran for heads of innovation all across AEC. These were large firms. These are multi, if not hundreds of millions of dollar revenue firms, architects, engineers, contractors. And one of the themes that kept coming up amongst these leaders, these are people that are spinning out their own technology, that have whole innovation departments, that are they're using building, buying AI, all of these types of things. One of the things that kept coming up in those conversations was, our biggest obstacle is that we don't have an organizational growth mindset. Using those words, the same words that we're using for the sole practitioner. So there's this thread, right, that goes all the way through it. Firm leaders that have hit $1 million, of course, they're celebrating, right? I hit $1 million. And of course, they're human and they're frustrated. How do I make $1,000,001? Why does it take so much to make $1 million and stay here at $1 million? And they start to recognize, usually, I think, one of maybe three things. One, they're the bottleneck, right? Everything, they've built it to this point and they have become the bottleneck that's not taking them through to $2 million, to $3 million, to $4 million, right? Everything has to run through them. They don't have the bandwidth. They can't do it all anymore. That's one of the hardest things to get from $100,000 to $1 million is figuring out what you can and can't do. You get to $1 million, you can't. Everything can't run through you. So that's one of them. Another thing is the culture of growth. And that's one thing that in my work outside of Entree Architect, outside of Iconic Firm with larger firms that I work with, that's actually what I call it, is a culture of growth. A focus on the growth of your people, a focus on the growth of your clients, and a focus on the growth of your organization, which you probably call your firm. So there's that cultural piece of it. And then there's a piece of it where, you know, like we said at the very beginning, we didn't learn this. We didn't learn this in school. How do I learn more about the technology? How do I learn more about the business? How do we develop the tools, get the tools? That's a common refrain as well in the larger firms. Do we buy it? Do we build it? Do we partner? How do we do this? Right? There's sort of a lack of knowledge of what are the next steps. I've made it this far and I don't know, right? I don't know how to take the next steps. I don't know what the next appropriate steps for beginning to scale from that point are.
What are some of those steps? In your work, how does clarity help firm owners step into a stronger leadership role?
Well, first of all, it's critical, right? You and I talk a lot, and I know that the idea for the iconic firm has a lot of roots in Dan Sullivan's. It's 10x is easier than 2x. And clarity is a big part of what Dan talks about in that book, right? You can't be scatterbrained, right? You can't look at all of the things in front of you and go, oh, I'm going to do this and this and bounce from thing to thing to thing. And I mentioned this morning on Java with Jeff, the number of times that I brought up Pareto's principle, the 80-20 rule, over the years of context and clarity, over the years of Java with Jeff. It's about 23,000 times I've brought it up. Pareto was an Italian economist that noticed that in all economies, there's somewhere there's a 20% of input, like this focused, resource-driven input, 20% that drives 80% of the output. And if we think about that for a minute, and we go, well, that means that there's also 80% of the input that's only driving 20% of the output. So if we think about that, what's going on there, right? It's not focused, it's scattered, maybe it's not resourced or not supported. It's the ineffective 80%. And once you get to that point, the $1 million revenue, where now you want to scale to 10, you can't afford that 80%. You can't afford that ineffective 80% anymore. You have to lean further and further in to the most effective 20. And Dan Sullivan talks about your unique abilities. So you as a firm owner, what are your unique abilities? And how do you lean into those and then let go of those things that are less effective? And we see examples of this all the time. We see different versions of this all the time. On Java with Jeff, we talk about letting go of things that we can't control. We talk about putting down things that we shouldn't be carrying. We talk about letting go of or dismissing or stopping things that don't serve us anymore. Once you get to $1 million in revenue, once you get to that point, there are things that you did as a firm leader to get to that point that no longer serve you to get from 1 million to 10 million. You have to let go of those things. So you really have to start focusing on only on that 20%, that most effective 20% where you can put your resources, and resources means time, money, energy, emotion, all of those things. That's really the biggest question. 2x, right back to the title of the book, 10x is easier than 2x. 2x is addition, right? Oh, I'm going to do more, right? If I were, and I do strategy sessions with leaders all the time, and they say, oh, well, we want to grow. Okay, well, what have you been doing to grow? We want to double our revenue. I just wrapped up some work with a firm that tripled their revenue in 2025. That's a little bit different. There are a lot of people that say, oh, we want to make 1.5, or we want to make twice what we did last year, or something like that. And most of the time, to get from 1 to 2, right, that is literally addition. Most of the time, we go, we're going to do more of what we've been doing. To get to 3x, 4x, 10x, you can't, right? You can't just do more. It's not addition anymore. It's multiplication. Although Dan Sullivan talks about it in terms of subtraction, right? I think about it a little bit differently. It's multiplication. I mentioned this morning. If you said, hey, if we're thinking about your personal growth, you say, hey, I want to be able to lift twice as much as I lift now, right? If you go to the gym and you're lifting weights or something, I want to be able to lift twice as much as I lift now. Well, maybe you work out twice as hard. Maybe you work out twice as often, something like that. If you say, I want to be able to lift 10 times as much as I do now, but okay, if you're going to the gym 3 times a week now, if you double that, you could go to the gym 6 times a week, or you could take a day off. You could go 6 times a week. You can't go 30 times a week, right? You can't 10x that same effort. So what are you going to do to get there? So it's multiplication. And where Dan Sullivan talks about it being subtraction, it's basically taking away all of the stuff that doesn't serve you anymore, all the stuff that's in your way, all the stuff that you did that you need to let go of to make space.
Right.
And we talk about that all the time in terms of growth. You have to make space in order to grow. And that's really, I think that's really Dan Sullivan's version of subtraction, right? It's subtracting these things, focusing on those unique abilities and making space to apply those and only those unique abilities.
It also requires you to have a completely different mindset.
Absolutely.
Right? Going from 1 million to 2 million, you do more of the same. To do 1 million to 10 million, or in your example, let's say you want to do 10x the weight, you literally, that would be, you'd become an Olympian to do that, right? So you would have to shift your entire mindset, your entire life, everything that you focused on to get to where you are today in order to achieve that massive goal.
Yeah.
Right? Business is similar, right? So if you've done something to get to a million, you know how to do that. Doing more of the same is not going to get you to 10 million. You have to run your business a completely different way. You have to have a different mindset. You have to have foundational shifts and a clear strategic framework to get you there in a very different way than it did from zero to 1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm doing strategy sessions with leaders, you know, it may be a better example than the lifting, right? If you want to double your revenue from last year, this year, you could say, well, you know, maybe I make twice as many business development calls this year as I did last year. And maybe that generates enough work to double my revenue. If you want to 10x your revenue from last year, you're probably not going to be able to 10x your business development efforts. And I don't think the math is actually going to, I don't think it's linear, first of all. So you're going to have to do some other things, right? Yes, you're going to have to increase your business development, but you're probably going to have to increase your fees. You're probably going to have to increase the project size. There's a lot of levers that you're going to have to pull.
And you're going to have to eliminate a lot of what you're doing as well, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm working with somebody right now that wants to increase their revenue. This is a common goal, right? I want to increase my revenue. And one of the hard conversations that we had last week was, you're going to have to stop saying yes to some of these other things because there's an opportunity cost, right? You're saying yes to these and it's taking up a lot of time. It's not generating the revenue that you desire. And so once you start saying no to these, it opens more time for business development, perhaps, but it also opens up more opportunity to do larger projects that are going to help you move the needle towards 10 instead of towards 2.
And as you mentioned, 80-20, it's literally 80% of what you're doing now, you're going to stop doing. And you're going to focus on the 20 that's going to get you to the 10x result.
Exactly.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health, building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect to learn more. That's WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed Podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to rcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's rcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Talk a little bit about the iconic firm Accelerator that we're going to offer in April. Talk a little bit about what that is, why we're offering it, and who's it for.
Okay, so you and I are going to host on April 17th in Charlotte, we're going to host the first Iconic Firm Accelerator, which is, it's a day-long event that then kicks off 30 days of work. But we're going to spend an entire day together, a cohort of just 12 firm leaders who right now, people are applying right now. They're requesting an invitation. This is the process that we're going through. They request an invitation. We've got some questions, some things that they have to commit to, because this one-day event in Charlotte is all about work, right? It's not lectures. It's not a conference. It's a day of work where we are looking at their impact. We're looking at their momentum. We're building out a toolkit for them. We're giving them a scoreboard and a canvas and a standard operating procedure checklist and a 90-day planner that we're going to work through all in that one day, and then check in with them day by day by day for 30 days after that to really launch them into the momentum that they need in order to scale from 1x to 10x. I mentioned earlier that I have been running for a while now startup incubators for venture capital. And this is a similar sort of model, right? It's you get started and here's the work that you have to put in. Here are the systems that have to be put in place. No matter what the startup idea is, we need to have a framework. We need to have systems in place. This is the way that we build. And so we're doing that in Charlotte. It is for firm owners that have hit the $1 million revenue and are committed to scaling. They want to scale to 10x and beyond. And so in that application that I mentioned, they have to commit to that. They have to be willing to show up and do the work. Again, this isn't lectures. These are working sessions. And we do have a guarantee where if you get to the end of the day and you say, yeah, this isn't for me. I don't think this is working. This isn't going to work for me. If you say that before dinner and hand us your workbook, that's fine. We'll refund you on the spot and you can walk away. No questions asked, no hard feelings, because this isn't for everybody, right? There is a certain brutality is not the word, but there's a certain reality to it, certainly, that you have to be willing to do these things. There are a lot of people, one, that start their firms that never make it to $1 million. And then there are plenty of people that make it to $1 million that don't make it beyond. You know, in my years of experience running incubators, the startup founders that actually make it to a seed round, to a series A, to a series B, you know, that get the type of funding that so many people love to talk about in the world, they're usually on their fourth or fifth startup by the time that they get that kind of funding. It takes work, it takes repetitions, and that's where we're starting, is putting all the systems in place, doing the work on the first day, accountability for the 30 days following that, and then participants that want to launch into a larger, or not larger, but a cohort that keeps doing the work and keeps the accountability going and keeps building the systems together, that will be opened up to them after the 1 day and then the 30 days.
I'm super excited about this. This is something that we've been working on for a long time, something that's very needed in our profession, right? There is a place, Entree Architect, for people who start and get to $1 million. There's also places that cater to the large firms.
Right.
But this group of architects who have built their firms to $1 million and are struggling to get to where they want, right? They want to continue to grow. They want to have impact in the world. we're going to help you put together a framework that helps you get there right there with you. What happens when architects don't do that, right? When they don't shift their foundation and they don't put together a framework, what happens?
Well, I think it's interesting. We see this a lot in professional services. It's not just architects. But there are a lot of people, and I don't say this with judgment, but there are a lot of people that say, hey, I'm going to start my own firm, usually out of frustration or need, right? You know, well, I've got kids now and there's car line and, you know, all the soccer games and things like that. And if I start my own firm, I'll have the flexibility to be able to take the kids to school or pick the kids up or go to the soccer games and things like that. And, or they're frustrated, you know, they're at work, they don't like the person that they're working with, working for. Oh, I could do this, you know, on my own, you know, the things like that. There's pretty similar origin stories with a lot of small firms. Well, in fact, a lot of large firms as well. This is a common inflection point, or these are common inflection points for the launching of firms. And a lot of people, again, with no judgment here, but a lot of people build lifestyle businesses, right? I want to do this so that I can go on vacation with my family, so that I can do the car line or whatever. And if that's what you want to build, that's fine. Now, some of the harsh reality is, and you and I are both friends with Mike Michalowicz. I think he was on Context and Clarity Live 4 times. I know he's been on the Entree Architect podcast a number of times. I know he's got a new book out that's a follow-up to Profit First. I think Mike's superpower is looking at complex business issues, boiling them down to their essence, and then writing a book about it. And I don't even know what he's up to now, maybe 7, 8 books, something like that. In Fix This Next, Mike Michalowicz lays on us the reality that if you've built a firm, and this Fix This Next, none of Mike's books are specifically for architects, they're about business. And usually specifically smaller businesses, but he lays on us the harsh reality that if you have started a firm and you cannot walk away from that firm for 4 weeks and that firm operate without you being there, without you checking in every day for 4 weeks, you don't have a business. You have a job. That's harsh, right? For many of us that think, oh, we're building this business, but it relies... Every ounce of revenue, every penny of revenue relies on us and our work. We don't have a business. We have a job. We've created this elaborate job for ourselves. And that's fine, right? If that's what you want, fine. But you need to understand that reality. And what happens with a lot of people, again, we didn't learn this in school, right? It's why I started teaching pro practice class when I was approached about it. It's like, yeah, we didn't learn about this stuff in school. I want to find some way to teach students about the business of architecture before they get into the field, before they get into the business of architecture. But we didn't learn this. Generations and generations did not learn this. We learned this from the firm leaders that we worked for who also didn't learn it, right? It's been the blind leading the blind for 100 years. And so... we struggle. We don't have the systems. We don't have all those things that we mentioned before. We're not leveraging the 80-20 rule. We're not leveraging Pareto's principle. We're not leveraging 10X versus 2X. We stagnate. I mean, the number of people, I don't know how many strategy sessions I've done. The end of the year, beginning of the year are popular times for strategy sessions. I've done quite a few over the months, sort of end of November until now. The number of people that I've done strategy sessions with whose revenue is flat, who, you know, have frustrations about hiring, who have frustrations about output, who have all of these same frustrations, common frustrations over and over and over. And it becomes bigger and bigger. The frustrations become bigger because if your revenue is flat right now, you're in trouble, right? You look around. If you're not increasing your revenue, what around you right now in your ecosystem is not becoming more expensive? You go to the gas station, you go to the grocery store, your health insurance, your professional insurance, you know, whatever your expenses are, which of those are remaining flat or are getting lower? The answer is none. which means that if your revenue is flat, you're going backwards. Right? That's the reality in relative terms. If you're not growing, quote, then you're going backwards. And that's a real danger. I mean, I respect people that build lifestyle businesses. I mean, I think there's a lot of beauty in that, right? Being able to build something that allows you to live the way that you want with the people that matter to you, the things that matter to you. I think that's beautiful. I think we should all aspire to that. And I think we all need to get serious and say, how do I sustain this? Because if I'm not growing it, I'm not able to sustain it. And does that mean that you need to grow it to $10 million? No. And if you don't want to, that's fine. The iconic firm is not for you. And that's fine. Same as you with your clients, right? You're not the right architect for every client. Every client's not the right client for you. And that's fine. That's the way it needs to be. And the same is true for the iconic firm. But if you do want to grow, you have to get serious about how do you systematize things? How do you focus? How do you find that clarity that we mentioned at the beginning? I mean, that's, to me, that's the biggest piece, right? Growth mindset and clarity. Clarity will come from growth mindset. Growth mindset usually comes from clarity. But if you can start there with those two things, you know, maybe even if you say, hey, iconic firm isn't for me, fine, join Entree Architect Network, show up for Java with Jeff every morning. Let's talk about growth mindset, right? We talk about it in terms of personal growth, relationship growth, and professional or business growth. That's what it's about, right? How, going back to what we said before, how do we stop doing the things that don't serve us anymore? How do we put down the things that we shouldn't be carrying anymore? How do we focus on the things that we can control versus the things we can't control so that we can make space? I think that's the biggest struggle of anybody that will listen to this, no matter who they are. How do I find space? They probably don't think about it like that. How do I find space? Oh, I've got the soccer game, and I've got the basketball game, and I've got the car line, and I've got the client meeting, and I've got to catch up on my emails. All of those things take up space. So how do you find space for the things that actually matter, right? Not the spending time with your kids and doing all those, being a parent and, you know, whatever your situation is. Not that those things aren't important, but how do you find the space for the things that are actually important? And in this society, this day and age, whether it's mental, emotional, physical, financial, time, finding the space in those types of resources is incredibly difficult. We don't do a good job of it. We're not intentional about it.
Yeah. We've been talking to architects forever, right? For 10 years, we've been talking about it. And the reason the iconic firm is being launched is because over and over and over again, we hear from those architects that have grown to that point where they have hit the $1 million and they are frustrated, right? They feel like they can't get through that barrier. They want to grow bigger. They want to have a bigger impact, and they just don't know how. And when you do finally make that foundational shift and install that clear strategic framework, it starts to work, right? It starts to grow. It starts to do all the things that you want to do. When you stop doing the things that you need to stop and you start focusing on the things that you need to focus on, things get better and continue to grow. But also, your stress levels reduce. Things start to flow and start to do the things that you want them to do. You have people in place to do the things that you used to do.
Yeah.
And running the business and being an architect starts to be fun again. Right. And you can have that impact in the world that you really wish you could have. And so the iconic firm is what it's called. The iconic firm accelerator is April 17th in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can learn more about iconic firm and the iconic firm accelerator at iconicfirm.org. So iconicfirm.org is where you can go for that. If this is about you, right, if this is something that resonates with you and you want to learn more, go to iconicfirm.org, click the button. Put together an application to see if you fit the spots for these 12 seats at the Iconic Firm Accelerator, and you can join us. It'll be a lot of fun. We're going to have an awesome dinner at the end after we work hard. Like Jeff said, this is going to be a day of work. We're going to get there early in the morning. We're going to work through. We're going to have lunch together. We're going to work some more. And then at the end, we're going to go celebrate our success at a really nice restaurant and have some fun. So iconicfirm.org is where you can learn about that. Jeff, thank you. Thank you for your dedication to our community of architects. Thank you for collaborating with me on this initiative that's very, very important. It's very, very needed in our profession. And so I'm thankful for you for dedicating your time and effort and helping us develop this new program and for coming by here and sharing some time with me at the Entre Architect Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity and for everybody else out there. I mean, this is like a lot of the things that we do at Entre Architect are, you know, they start as passion projects, right? And the fact that we can point to three common things that firm owners say, hey, I'm the bottleneck. Hey, we've plateaued in terms of growth, or hey, we don't even have a culture to figure out this growth, to keep this going. I mean, it's, I think a lot of us get into this profession because we want to help people, right? And to be able to clearly identify those three things and hear it over and over, it means people need help. And so I'm thrilled to be able to work with you, Mark, and the people that the firm leaders that will join the Iconic Firm Accelerator and help, right? Help them get past those three barriers, build something that is iconic by the title, certainly, but also is impactful, right? For themselves, for their families, for the people that they work for and with. I mean, this is big. It's meaningful. It's purposeful. And it's not just about that 1x to 10x. It's actually quite a bit bigger than that. So this is exciting. I'm happy to do it. I'm thrilled about it. Looking forward to April 17th in Charlotte.
Yep. So check it out, iconicfirm.org. We'll see you there.
Thanks, everybody.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entre Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entre Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entre Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entre Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entre Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entre Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.